If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret. Searching for the sound. This is The Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman.
Listen to Crying for Hope, the title track from the new George Porter Jr. and Run-In Partners album. This is actually the first Run-In Partners album since 2015, and that release was an EP, so it's been a while. That isn't to suggest the Meters alumnus and bass player George Porter Jr. hasn't been busy, but this configuration at least has been on hiatus. So when we caught up with the legendary bass player, we asked what made him decide to work on this project now.
Well, we had nothing to do. I was one day I was up here in the studio and I was just looking at sessions and files, and I opened the Run-In Partners folder, and I realized that, you know, we had cut these songs, you know, we cut these songs in 2017.
Wow.
Most of them, not all of them, but about maybe five or six of those songs on that record. With Brent Anderson was still in the band on guitar. And when Brent quit the band, you know, I just kind of like pushed the session away, you know, just put it away. And because I didn't have a guitar player in mind at the time. And a lot of the stuff that Brent did, I didn't like all of it. So, you know, I was going to get Tony Hall to do some guitar work on it, but then I said, I need to find my own guitar player first, you know. And so I just put the session on the side and started working with the Porter Trio with Michael and Terrence, and was having real fun with that, and you know, totally forgot all about the running partner session. And I pulled that session up that day, and I said, man, there's some good music on here, you know.
Yeah.
And so we had Chris Atkins in the band, who's a wonderful guitarist. And I said, all right, we need to get Chris to put guitar parts on this music, you know? So I talked with Limler, which is the keyboard player, Michael, and we started uploading stuff into the Pro Tools cloud thing. And we started working on it and revisiting, and Mike wanted to redo some of his keyboard parts, and he had gotten a different key piano patch, and he wanted to use it. It was a much better piano patch. So we were working on it, and while that was going on, I started writing some new songs, you know, and it was interesting, you know, that I was writing new songs with my acoustic bass downstairs in the living room at 7 o'clock in the morning when I let my dog out to go do her business. You know, she wakes me up at 6:45 to go outside. And usually she wants to eat too then. So I'll feed her and then wait for her to go do number two. And I was all that time, I'm sitting, you know, for about a half hour, I'm sitting down. So I'll be playing my little bass, my little acoustic bass downstairs. So I just started recording on my phone some of the stuff that I'm playing downstairs and brought that up to the studio and uploaded it into the cloud and sent it to Mike. And, Mike started spelling out stuff. And then, some of the stuff turned out to be lyrical stuff. So it got Mia Bordas and Susan Calso and Denise Sullivan. And one of the tracks, there was one of the older tracks, I realized that I couldn't remember where those lyrics came from. Turned out it was from Leslie Smith. So it was like, oh, okay. So yeah, that was, that's how we got back into that session. Now I need to go back to work on the Porter Trios record.
I'm curious, you mentioned that you were playing bass, an acoustic bass. Is that where these songs start? Is that generally how they grow organically? Is it you putting down a groove and figuring out where everything fits around it? Or is it different every time? How does a George Porter song come together in 2021?
Well, yes. It usually me and an acoustic bass sitting downstairs, when I get upstairs to the studio, it seems like I want to be too involved in the session, so I forget what I did. my mental state about the part that I just heard and then wanted to put down, I lose it. So I've been just kind of like, don't come upstairs until I have the part in mind and record it on my phone, and then that way I can get up here and get involved with click tracks and all that kind of crap, because I got it right here.
55 or 6 years into this, are there still lots of grooves, you think? There's still lots of grooves for you to find?
I wrote two yesterday. Yeah, this thing's still popping in my head. I'm not necessarily one of those political driven, persons, but, I still feel real big. I mean, I was inspired. I had to do yesterday for the closing season, the finality of the NCSI. They wanted to do a Such a Night song. And night before last, I was, thinking about the song, and all of a sudden, man, my brain just started clicking around some other chord formulas, with somewhat the melody on a part of "If I Don't Do It, I Know Somebody Else Will," man, it's 2 o'clock in the morning. I jumped up. and the bass was downstairs, so I had to go downstairs and start playing this idea, you know, what's going on in my head. And last night I put it in and put it, I programmed it into the computer. So now at this point, it'll go to Mike Limbler, and Michael will, you know, he would map it out, you know, and spell it out and, you know, correct my timing and stuff like that. And then send it back to me for me to piece and put the parts all the places where I want them, you know.
Awesome. I'm curious about, and this goes way back. This goes back to early meter stuff. I'm curious about how you decide what's going to have vocals on it, what's going to be lyrics, and what's going to be instrumentals. This record has, you know, Get Back Up and Cloud Funk and Taste of the Truth and Spanish Moss, all amazing George Porter type instrumentals. But I'm curious about how you decide to say, well, Crying for Hope, that groove needs some lyrics and some poignant lyrics. How do you decide what goes where?
After we had laid down the track, and I'm listening to just the song, and not all the time does Michael play a piano part that suggests melody.
Right.
So while I'm listening to things, you know, things just kind of start floating around in my head. Get Back Up was supposed to be a lyrical song. Mia Borders wrote lyrics for that song, but they're just too good for me. I just could not pull the lyrics off with conviction, I should say. I think that's the best word I can use, with conviction. You know, to sound like a real, maybe Aaron Neville could sing that song, you know?
Okay.
Mike said, well, let's leave it in the instrumental, you know, let's leave it in the instrumental. So that song as is, you know, it's not like a big in your face melody, you know, it's like just a musical moment, you know, of stuff that's happening. And so we left it that way, you know. But you know, yeah, it kind of works both ways, as when you're just listening to things and just saying, I think the one, God, I can't think of the name of it now, but it's the one of it. It was, I wrote that whole melody with just the bass. It was just a whole bass line.
Wow.
I sent it to Chris, because I was going to have Chris. I wanted Chris to play the melody, play what I was playing in double stops, and I was going to put a bass line. The bass line was going to be don't bum 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 bum, you know, like what that mole kind of jump thing, and I wanted Chris to play like double stops, the whole bass line that thing, because the whole thing was just one bass lick.
Wow.
So after Chris had done the double stop thing, you know, him and Mike had decided that, man, we're not gonna get rid of the bass line. We like the bass line there, you know. We're gonna keep that. You're just gonna have to learn the lick. I said, I don't wanna learn that. That's too much. That's like way too many notes for me, you know. We're gonna keep it in there. So the decision is coming down to, like, Mike is gonna play bass keyboard, play the mold kind of sound, because I use a kind of a envelope filter with a octave divider to make that sound.
Right.
And so Mike is gonna play that now with his left hand, and I gotta learn that bass line.
Well, if there's anybody that can learn how to play bass, it's probably, or that song, it's probably you. Seeing as how you initially wrote it. Crying for Hope, you mentioned that you're not specifically political, but it is an issue. It continues to be an issue in the United States. Black Lives Matter and everything that happened about a year ago with the police brutality and continues to happen. Is it just time that you have to step up, that as an African American, you have to continue to say things for the public consciousness, even though you don't necessarily want to?
I think that, you know, I think that I have, you know, not necessarily I, but, you know, I think that it's probably not something that I went after to doing, but it was like something that was definitely inspired by what was going on around me, around us, you know. And, you know, I think we all suffer. You know, I can't remember what song it was, but I remember I loved it when, oh man, I can't think of his name. Big heavy set singer, man, R&B singer. He says, none of us are free if none of us are free if one of us is down or something like that.
Right.
It was a wonderful song. But it was like, you know, it's like really true, man. You know, we all in this nasty boat, and until it docks and come to terms within itself, you know, as a country, man, we still gonna suffer. We're gonna always gonna be suffering, you know, and it's gonna be all of us, you know. It's not just me. It's not just Black folks, you know. I think all peoples. It's is eventually gonna suffer because of the overlooking of a few.
Yeah, agreed. The pandemic's been tough. You haven't been touring. You're a guy who likes to get out on the road or at least play the clubs locally. But you've been playing a lot at home and you've been doing these online gigs. How has that been for you?
They've been fun. We've been having a great time. We did there was a local brewery, micro brewery here in town that licensed one of the Meter songs. It's named Zony Mash. And they licensed that song for their brewery. And we played that room the other yard the other night. And it was so much fun. And it must have been about 135, 140 people there, but there was, well, everybody had their space. They all hung in their little groups, you know, their little small patches, and it was excellent. It was really fun. It was a little chilly, but yeah. But it was fun. It was fun, and I had a wonderful time. The band played so well, and it was good.
You missed that, right? You missed the camaraderie of the band and playing live and the fans and all of that.
Absolutely, absolutely. In fact, this coming Friday, we're gonna go up to Baton Rouge and do one very similar to that. Well, that's tomorrow, actually.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's great. How proud of you of the music scene that's sort of really come to bear in New Orleans? You know, whether it's Galactic or Anders Osborne, who does something completely different, or your band and some of the people that play with you. I mean, the New Orleans sound is so much bigger than it was and has evolved in so many ways since you started and Toussaint and the other Neville brothers and whatever. But how proud of you that this city has grown enormously in terms of music and providing music for the rest of the country and the world.
Well, I would love to be able to blame the city for our musical success, but I can't legitimately say that because the city has really not done enough to support its local musicians. The idea of protecting us better, you know. I mean, you know, that now that's not talking about the shutting down of places where we have to play and stuff, but I'm just meaning that just how we're promoted. I mean, you know, they talk about the food, they talk about the Bourbon Streets and all that kind of stuff, but you know, they rarely talk about the music venues that are not in the mainstream thing, you know, right. The little clubs, you know, the you know, the four or five larger name clubs that support some of the touring bands get all of the talk, you know, but the local musicians that's playing the little clubs, you know, the little Ferret Street clubs and the little Maple Street clubs and, you know, Oak Street clubs and stuff like that, you know, the Frenchman Street clubs, they're not getting any bite, and the bands that are playing those clubs are getting no love from the city, you know, at all. I mean, it's getting to the point now. I think I'm not sure now. I may be wrong about this, but I think that the guys that play on the street now has to get paperwork to play on the street. Wow. And you know, I mean, Yusuf can just go out and set up and play. You know, I did that with David Lasty and his brothers and the Taste of New Orleans for years and years and years. You know, when the Meters weren't touring, I was on Domain and Decatur playing with David Lasty and you know, Eleanor Tatum and you know, Wanda Ruzan, you know, and it was, you know, that was, you know, what part of me, I remember at one time that Jimmy Buffett used to play on the corner of Rural, I think it was Rural and Toulouse.
Back
in the days, you know.
But in terms of exposing the rest of the country, like what you guys do and what Dump a Stunk does, in terms of letting everybody know that there still is a great music scene in New Orleans. And like you said, maybe not necessarily the city's not doing a great job, but you as musicians are great ambassadors for what's going on, right?
Yeah, I mean, the bands, you know, the guys, I mean, Ted Benoit is on the road. He's out there. He's been out there for a good while now. You know, there were a few other local bands that's, you know, that despite the fact that this germ is going around, they are out there playing, you know, and the majority of us have discovered the you know, the Zoom thing. We've discovered the streaming, you know, Anders Osborne does he has to be the king of the late night stream thing.
Yeah.
I mean, somebody told me, man, at one point Anders had almost 20,000 people online one night. He said he crashed the server.
Wow.
Man, you know, that's gotta be killing, you know. I mean, you know, Ivan Neville does really well with his thing, John Groh. You know, so all of the guys who are feeling comfortable enough to do it. And I just got, I mean, I did, a, I was doing a Monday night stream playing a lot of the recordings from my Monday night Maple Leaf show on Monday nights. And then a few weeks ago, I just decided, man, you know something, I'm just going to sit up here in the studio, me and my bass and try this, you know, I mean, you know, yeah. I can't get away with all the stuff that guitar players can get away with because, you know, I can't play all the cards. Then a couple of weeks ago, I pulled my guitar out and played my guitar.
Wow.
So it was, you know, I've been having a good time. I think the New Orleans is the music of this city is not going to be, which I said, blackened out.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to live. You know, I wish there were more of the original players available to do it. But, you know, but there's so many parts of this community that, you know, like one of the other things, you know, is that you know, there's no internet in some parts, still parts of the city, there's no internet service, right. You know, and free internet service, you know, less on, you know, internet service you got by, mm-hmm. But, you know, for parts of the community and that lower night ward down there, I'm not sure how, you know, I haven't been down there in a year. So I'm not sure how it's faring down there. You know, I had an aunt that was living down there. When she moved back uptown after Katrina, you know, I think I never went back. I haven't been down there in 2 years, 3 years mm-hmm. maybe, you know. So, mm-hmm. You know, but I think the city as a whole, parts of the city is back and up and running 100%.
Right.
You know, just with the fact that, you know, the COVID has thing, you know, maybe having everybody shut down to some degree. But I mean, it's function. It's functioning.
Right.
But there are still parts of this city that are still non-functional.
Right. Right. Let's get back to the record. It comes out, we're actually airing this on Friday. So it comes out today. It's out already. So people can go and listen to it. Obviously you're not touring the record. You're doing some dates here and there. Is the plan to continue making more Running Partner records, George Porter Jr. Trio records? What is the plan moving forward?
Well, on the table, well, on that computer right there, there's two projects that's got to get finished. One is the Porter Trio, the trio record that we have started. We like, I think, 15 songs into the session.
Wow.
And you know, just tweaking that to be done, because all of that was done here in this room when we were all able to be together. Now, so but we're going to do pretty much the same thing what we did with the Running Part. I think I'm going to load all the sessions up in the cloud, and we're just going to start tweaking, you know, and see what needs to be done and how to fix this, and if we need to go through this, and if my bass lines need to be straightened out because I'm playing out of tune or something like that. And then also, it has been suggested to me that the Running Part, not Running Part, but the Porter Trio should cut a jazz record. So, you know, we've been entertaining that thought.
Cool. So there's no stopping you, right? I mean, you're just continuing to pump out great music.
I don't think I'm too lazy to start a new job. So, so I guess this is the one I'm going to be dealing with.
Awesome. Thanks so much for taking the time, and thanks so much for all of the music, both yesteryear and today. We really appreciate it. And thanks for taking the time, man. It's a blessing to be able to talk to you. So thanks so much for taking the time.
Well, thanks for calling, and happy Friday, Ira.
All right. Be well, man. Bye.
Take care, my friend.
To learn more about what George Porter Jr. is up to, visit georgeporterjr.com. Before we leave you, how about another track from the new Running Partners record? Here is Want to Get Funky, a song I'm sure you'll agree is vintage George Porter Jr.
to someplace new. Where do I go when it's time to get funky? I need to get some funk in my ear. Where do I go when I want to get funky? No doubt I know it ain't happening here. I need to go where they're getting down funky. That ain't going to happen in here. Where do I go when I want to get funky? Where do I go? Is there someplace near? When the time's right and I want to get funky, I need to get some funk in my ear.
You've been listening to The Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. For more, visit thesoundpodcast.com.